At this point, I have to mention a classification, Homo erectus. I think it's a classification of convenience, a sort of a too-hard basket, into which they put difficult cases. Java man and Peking man were the first to be classified Homo erectus. Others have followed, and you'll see what I mean. In 1975, Richard Leakey found another skull, the Kubi Fora skull. Its brain, 850 cc's, and it was dated 1.5 million years old. Leakey classed this Kubi Fora as a Homo erectus. But what is it really? The Kubi Fora skull looks quite human. Creationist Dr. Duane Gish thinks it might be a small Neanderthal skull. And this opinion gained strength from another find, a very recent find by Leakey. In August 1984, he dug up a human skeleton. And the skull of this one is very clearly a Neanderthal skull, a Homo sapiens. But the dating is 1.5 million years, and that doesn't fit the evolution story. So what happened? Though it looked like a Homo sapiens Neanderthal, it was classified in that convenient category, Homo erectus. Now, Richard's mother, Mary Leakey, was also in the field. In the 1970s, she was finding things in Tanzania at Laetoli'il. First, she found a human-like jawbone in rock dated 3.5 million years. Then in 1977, she found human-like footprints in rocks also dated 3.5 million. Human remains in rocks dated 3.5 million years old. Well, that didn't fit. So, jawbone and footprints were classed as belonging to an ancestor of man. Enter now Donald Johansson. He began digging in Ethiopia at Haidar. In 1974, Johansson found human-like jaws and teeth. Next year, he found remains of several human-like adults and children. They were called the first family of man. These finds were dated 3.5 million years old. Johansson regarded them as human. The media reported them as human, Homo. But humans 3.5 million years old, again, something had to give, and it did. And Lucy did it, along with a somersault by Johansson. This Lucy was a small, ape-like skeleton, her height 3.5 feet. Not much of her skull was found, but her brain was said to be less than 450 cc's. Her age was dated 3 million years. They put Lucy together, and Johansson was definite that Lucy was a pure beast, and everyone agreed Lucy was an Australopithecine. She was different from the human-like first family of man. Then came Johansson's somersault. In 1979, he declared that the ape-like Lucy and the other human-like bones were not, after all, two distinct species. No, he said, the whole lot comprised a single species. He now combined the lot of them into a new, subhuman creature, which he named Australopithecus afarensis, or afar man. Then he claimed that the afar man was the common ancestor of two branch lines. One line led to the Australopithecines, he said, and the other line led to man, in this way. Afar man led to Homo habilis, then to Homo erectus, then on to Homo sapiens, modern man. The Leakeys and many other scientists strongly reject afar man. They leave afar man out. The Leakey tree starts with Habilis, then Homo erectus, then Homo sapiens. And now the latest, hottest development was an announcement by Leakey in August 1986 that he's found another Zinjanthropus skull, this one dated 2.5 million years old, almost as old as Lucy. And that, said Leakey, means that the Australopithecus, Zinjanthropus and other hominid species could not have evolved from Lucy. Leakey went further. He suggested that Lucy might be parts of two separate skulls, mistakenly joined together. Well, now, if you're getting confused, don't worry. Everyone's confused. Evolution is in total confusion. Ape men come and ape men go. In New Scientist, 26th of March, 1981, science writer John Reeder said, quote, "By now, laymen can be forgiven for regarding each new fossil arrival as no less ephemeral than the weather forecast." And he added a comment that may surprise you. He said, "The entire hominid collection known to us would barely cover a billiard table." Unquote. So out of a table full of bones is woven the fantasy of man's evolution. In The New Scientist, 3rd of May 1984, the head of paleontology in the British Museum, Peter Andrews, has tried to clarify the picture, but I think his article simply highlights the muddle. A muddle where there are many alternatives which are conflicting, and each expert chooses that which suits his own ideas. A muddle where there's uncertainty whether Homo sapiens evolved once or evolved twice in two different places. A muddle where it's uncertain whether Homo erectus and Homo sapiens are one species or two species. In all the confusion, there's one great scientist who is not confused. Lord Zuckerman was chief scientific advisor to the British government. Zuckerman has made specialized investigation of all these fossils. And do you know what he thinks? Well, he doesn't think that there's any real science in the search for fossil man. And he doesn't think there's any evidence in the fossil record of man's evolution from some lower creature. And with Zuckerman's opinion, we end the section on ape men. Now at this point, I have to bring in a short segment that was not in the original plan. Even while I was doing this tape, a new book came into my hands, Creation and Evolution, The Facts and Fallacies, by Dr. Alan Hayward, who is a Bible-believing Christian. The first part of the book argues against biological evolution, and that's good. But the second part argues in favor of evolution geology and billions of years, and is against deluge geology. I'm informed that the book is already making impact. I'm told that the Creation Science Foundation of Brisbane will be doing a review of the book in their periodical Creation Ex Nihilo. Meanwhile, I'll try to make a few brief comments. Dr. Hayward favors the Big Bang hypothesis. But most creationists regard the Big Bang as an atheistic device to get rid of God. Scientists generally admit that the Big Bang has to be explained as a singularity in which the physical laws, as we know them, did not apply. A singularity. I defy anyone to justify a singularity as science. Well, singularity aside, the whole thing is fantastically impossible. And Dr. Hayward lets the cat out of the bag on pages 60-61. He reveals that the force of explosion and the force of gravity had to be so exactly coordinated that a variation either way of one part in 1,000,000,000,000 would have made the formation of the universe impossible. Now, if to that you say, wow, well, listen to the next. He then reveals that the weak nuclear force and the force of gravity would have to be coordinated to an accuracy of one part in 10,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, aiming to hit a one-inch target at a distance of 20 billion light years. Now, how fantastically impossible can you get? Having revealed the atheistic hypothesis of Big Bang to be impossible, Dr. Hayward then salvages it on page 60 by invoking God to supervise the operation. That is, God's miracle is needed to get the ungodly thing to work. Another point. By the classical physics of Newton, the original superdense matter would have collapsed inwards. It would not have exploded. Dr. Hayward says classical physics did not apply, that it was relativity physics that applied. Well, relativity is not every scientist's cup of tea. In the Creation Research Society's quarterly, September 1984, Thomas Barnes, Emeritus Professor of Physics, lists some of these scientists, such as the father of nuclear physics, Ernest Rutherford, who considered Einstein's relativity to be nonsense. Also Charles Lane Poor, who wrote devastating refutations of claims that a solar eclipse had confirmed Einstein's predicted gravitational attraction of light rays. Also Herbert Dingle, Fellow of the Royal Society, former President of the Royal Astronomical Society, and author of 2 Encyclopaedia Britannica articles on Einstein's relativity. Dingle at first agreed with relativity, but later he saw serious contradictions within the theory itself. Also, Dr. L. Essen, inventor of the atomic clock. He has exposed serious errors in relativity. Also, the British scientist, G. Burniston Brown, who has written some of the clearest refutations of relativity.